Welcome to Inbound Raleigh, a podcast about transportation in the City of Oaks. I'm Jennifer.
And I'm James.
Today on our show, we're talking about the Raleigh Bike Plan. There's so much going on in transit and transportation news that it's been really difficult with this new podcast to try to figure out what we should focus on first. But I did want to get this one in sometime this year, 2016, because the Raleigh Bike Plan just got a big update. And if you're interested in bicycling, you may be like, well, why do I care about the Raleigh Bike Plan? Yes, the answer is yes, you still care, and here's why. This updated bike plan is all about people who are not serious bicycle riders. So if you're not out there, rain or shine, with your awesome, you know, pants on, that's okay. You still want to be listening to this episode and paying attention at least a little bit to the bike plan. And the other part of that, too, is there's a lot of economic benefits for communities with a lot of bicycling facilities. You know, Raleigh always makes these top 10 and whatever lists. Part of that is because we have, like, this greenway system and working on this bike stuff. So before we get to that, James and I like to talk about a few transit and transportation news updates when we can. So, James, what do we got?
Yeah, so those of you who drive on Wade Avenue to get to work, which is a lot, you may have noticed the flyover bridge from downtown to Wade is now missing a bunch of trees. The city and I think the state have begun to start the work for that bridge replacement project, and you may recall how the city's transportation planning manager, Eric Lamb, talked about that here on our show. And I think we'll be doing a deeper dive on that project pretty soon. As Jennifer said, there is just so much going on.
Yeah, no kidding. That one's going to take some time. Yeah, Eric talked about it. It's going to be the two replacement bridge projects, and that's going to be a huge pain for a lot of drivers. So we are going to get back to that, but that'll probably be a whole episode by itself. Two other things I wanted to mention. The city had some cool bus shelter designs on display at CAM recently. That's the City Art Museum. Is that what CAM stands for? I can't remember. I always call it CAM. And the public was invited.
I think it's Contemporary Art
Museum. You're right. Contemporary Art Museum. Thank you. The public was invited to vote on their favorite of these three shelters. I think it's three. By the time you hear this, you're going to have missed them. But these shelters are part of the transit plan. And of course, we all just approved that and spent some time talking about it. So if you go to our website, inboundraleigh.com, I put some photos and some of the information the city sent out about those shelters. So you can go back and take a look. Also, I wanted to give a quick shout-out about the Moore Square bus station. Obviously, Union Station's getting a lot of press, but, you know, Moore Square is undergoing a huge renovation right now, and I think, I can't tell for exactly, but it seems to have entered the phase two of the work, because they did finish shutting it completely down, and now all the buses are over by the park. I'm not sure if we're going to do a full episode on that, especially before it's done, because I think they are supposed to be finished up sometime this winter, so I'm linking to some information about that in our show notes. And then, of course, yeah, Union Station, that's coming along, too. I think the city, I was told, was hiring a station manager sometime in January, which is going to be pretty exciting. So I think sometime next year after that happens, I'm going to try to get that person in for an interview, and we'll do an episode on that.
Yeah, that'd be really great to get to talk to them, see what they've got planned for the station. But yeah, moving on to the bike plan, like we said, a lot going on, but today we did want to talk about that plan. We'll start with a bit of a history lesson. The first official Raleigh Bicycle Transportation Plan was released in 2009, but prior to that, the city had actually put together a bike map in response to the 1973 oil crisis. And some of you might be aware, Raleigh's actually had two, I don't know if you can really call them gas shortages in the last few months, but there have been some pipeline incidents that have I guess driven up demand and driven down supply. There's been some long lines. I remember Sheets was completely out of gas for about a week, which was crazy. But I don't think it really affected anyone that terribly, except they had to wait a little longer to get their gas. But anyway, so that old plan focused on commuter routes for people that, you know, it was a much more serious gas shortage back then, and people couldn't drive sometimes because of it. But anyway, Jason Myers, a transportation planner with the city who is the go-to person for the bike plan, told me that if you see those, you know, oval-shaped green signs around the city with bikes and numbers on them, those are a result of that plan from the 70s. But the first truly comprehensive bicycle plan that was more than just basically a map didn't come together until 2009. And at that point, the city only had 4 miles of striped bike lanes. And today we've got more than 50 miles of those lanes.
Yeah, I can't believe, first the stats, it's just like, wow, from 4 to 50, we made a lot of progress. and then it was interesting that we didn't really get going on this whole bike movement until 2009. I guess the city, the way it's just developed, and, you know, if you pay attention to some of the city issues and their discussions about urban growth, you know that, you know, it used to be pretty sprawly and it was a car-centric growth. And so it makes sense that maybe it just took a little longer for bicycling to be a bit more common as far as a mode of transportation goes. Anyway, the city worked on this new plan with a group called BPAC. That's BPAC. That stands for the Bicycling and Pedestrian Advisory Commission. We're putting a link to that plan in our notes so you can check it out. The plan is really not short. And as James and I were just saying right before the show, that it's not necessarily user-friendly. So we're just going to kind of give a broad overview. Paul Neville is the vice chair of BPAC, and he said the plan has both the, quote, blue sky stuff and, quote, the numbing details. And we can assure you, yes, there is quite a bit of numbing detail in there. This version was approved earlier this year, and it's essentially an update of that 2009 plan. It's not brand new, but there's a lot of exciting new components that have been added, and it's just kind of the next steps.
Yeah, that's right. As Jason had explained to me, the main goal of that 2009 plan was to get a good network of bike lanes around the city, whereas the update, it aims to serve a broader spectrum of riders throughout Raleigh.
Right, and broader spectrum, you know, that sounds like some city jargon. Yeah, it is. Here's what that means. The city breaks down cyclists into four tiers or categories of riders. At the top are those highly experienced people. We are the 1%. That is actually their estimated population percentage, by the way. The 1%. Of course, those folks don't really need a bike plan. These are the people who are going to be riding their bikes anywhere they can, all the time. They're out there. Quote, as described in the plan, quote, these bicyclists can ride faster than other user types, prefer direct routes, and will typically choose roadway connections, even if shared with vehicles, over separate bicycle facilities such as shared use paths. So, in other words, yeah, these are the serious people. You've seen them. You're scared of them.
Yeah, I think Jason actually described this category as strong and fearless. People that are in excellent physical shape, ones that own really nice bikes. Again, you know, the 1%. I had actually bought my single speed fixie at Walmart for $70.
You know, I'm sure it's a glorious bike, James. You shouldn't be dissing yourself.
Well, it is. It's called a Thruster, and it has a yellow and a red wheel. It's pretty sweet, but it's really useless for biking around my neighborhood because it's so hilly, and I'm, you know, certainly not in the kind of shape that those strong and fearless 1%ers are. So.
Well, and I think on this podcast, we've pretty much well documented your aversion to bicycling.
Yeah.
People are going to be like, Jen, why is James the co-host if we keep explaining how much you dislike cycling? In all fairness, though, I kind of used to feel that way about bicycling until about 2009, actually, when I moved downtown. So funny how that works. I now probably could be counted in this next category in the bike plan, and these are called the enthused and confident people. This group is made up of commuters, recreationalists, racers, and utilitarian bicyclists. They're about 5 to 10% of the population, and they're not super different from the strong and fearless group, except that they generally do prefer to use bike lanes and other bike facilities.
Yeah, let me just interrupt for a second again, because some of our listeners might get confused by that term, bike facilities. It's basically a catch-all term for any and all bike infrastructure, like a bike lane. I had initially thought it meant actual facilities, like a BMX park or something, but it could be nothing more than just a painted line on the road, essentially.
James, you know BMX bikes are motorized, right? So this is a little different.
Whatever.
To me, bike facility sounds kind of like bike storage or something like that,
yeah.
Which they have at, you know, Citrix, for example. But anyway, moving on. The next category is cyclists, interested but concerned. This is the largest segment of the population. It's about 60% of people. These cyclists tend to ride almost exclusively on low-traffic streets or on greenway trails in good weather.
So basically, this is the weak and fearful crowd.
Oh, okay. This is coming from the guy with the $70 fixie from Walmart, by the way. This interested and concerned group, you know, they view heavy car traffic as a barrier to their cycling experience. And really, they do have good reason to be concerned. I'm not going to go into a bunch of stats here, because mostly I don't want to scare anybody. But if you want to read more about that, the bike plan does have, in Section 2, a whole bunch of existing conditions and stats and information about accidents that currently happen. And this is the part where we get into why you care about the plan, even if you're not a serious cyclist. The city really hopes that if they come up with the right kind of encouragement, education, and provide a better experience, that this category of people will eventually rise to the enthused and confident category.
Right, but didn't you say there were four categories? I mean, I don't know what could really be lower than the weak and fearful, like toddlers with training wheels or what?
You're the only man making that designation. That's just me. The final category is one that you're probably in, despite owning that, you know, sweet Walmart cruiser.
It does have two flat tires, and I haven't ridden it about 3 years. But yes, okay. I do own it.
See, so. Back to the why are you the co-host on this? I'm going to have to find a new one.
I'd rather take the bus. Yeah.
All right, well, that qualifies you then.
Okay.
This group is called the No Way, No How, which okay. I think is pretty funny. Jeez. These are people that they're, for many reasons, they're just not going to ride a bike, period. No circumstances. They make about 30% of the population.
That's my kind of people. Really, one of the big differences that Jason pointed out between the 2009 plan and the 2016 upgrade is that the initial plan catered almost exclusively to that enthused and confident crowd. The interested but concerned folks had the greenway system, but that was about it. The 2016 version of the plan, however, is intended to serve cyclists of all ages and abilities, 8 to 80, as Jason put it. And if you've been to any of the meetings, I'm sure you've heard that 8 to 80 term. It's pretty catchy. But it's basically anybody who's interested in riding a bike at all, and they should feel comfortable on this network.
Oh, some poor 81-year-old out there is feeling left out. one cool stat in the plan is that 70% of North Carolinians said that they would walk and bike more for their daily needs if walking and bicycling conditions were improved. I don't know if that's one of those where you say you're going to do it, and then, you know, like I said, I was going to get up and go jogging this morning, right. But I didn't. But not every link on the network is going to be designed for this 8 to 80 crowd, right? Isn't that right, James?
Yeah, oh yeah, of course. I mean, it's just that the bike rally planners want to make more of the network available to more of the population, so it's not just those strong and fearless folks who, you know, sort of touched on, they don't necessarily need the plan because they'll go anywhere at any time. They don't care. But the main way the city's going to include more people is with these facilities that we mentioned earlier.
Well, and you had mentioned bike lanes earlier as one example of these facilities, but let's talk about some of the other types included in the plan. I'm sorry, James, I don't think BMX parks are in there.
That is really unfortunate.
Indeed, James, indeed. But there is a BMX bike park in Raleigh, so I know where you're going to be next weekend.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. All right. Get back from Thanksgiving. First stop. Yeah.
Anyway, back to, well, you know, this is going to air after Thanksgiving, in case people are confused, but that's okay.
Yeah, sorry about that.
We record ahead of time. I'm sorry. Back to the bicycling plan, let me just explain that the designations that we've mentioned are in the introduction section. This section goes into a lot of detail about the 2009 plan and then the goals for this updated version. There are three goals. One is to build priority projects to serve cyclists of all ages and abilities, which we talked about, that 8 to 80. The second goal is to launch or participate in 4 new programs in 4 years. And third is to attain designation as a silver-level bicycle-friendly community in the next 3 years. That designation comes from the League of American Bicyclists, and it's been one of Eric Lamb's goals to get from bronze to silver. I'm linking in the show notes to a blog post he wrote about that if you want to learn more. And then each of those three goals comes with a sub-goal, and for example, one of them is to have 30 miles of separated bikeways within 5 years. And that's, again, we're talking about all these bike facilities.
Yeah, exactly. The plan went through and took inventory of all the current bike facilities and then identified, you know, the gaps between them. And the goal is to connect more bikeways and paths so that it's easier for people to get around on a bike, whether they're casual riders or fall on the more serious end of the spectrum. And to connect things, they will create more buffered lanes and separated lanes, which may offer more comfort to those interested but concerned folks. These two type of lanes use different paint markings or even bollards or pavement to separate cyclists from vehicles on the road. You may have seen some green paint, for example, in some parts of downtown. Those are intersection treatments to help drivers realize that those spaces are for bicyclists. Some areas also have bollards to keep cars from using those, we'll call them safe spaces, as a turn lane.
Yeah, and as someone who's ridden on bike lanes before, I can tell you those can be helpful because some cars decide, hey, I'm just going to go ahead and turn right in here.
Right.
And as the plan points out, this is going to help those interested but concerned folks because you may have seen sharrows on the road, and I think there's some education needed about what a sharrow is, but it's basically a picture of a bicycle with like kind of an upward-pointing triangle arrow. Those aren't necessarily helpful for people because a lot of people don't know what they mean. And so the idea that maybe we need a little bit more makes a lot of sense to me. I was talking to a bicycle rider recently who said she's talked to car drivers who think that those share signs are actually meant to tell bicyclists to share the road, not as a reminder for vehicles that, hey, bikes are out here. So that's funny.
Yeah, and it took me a while to realize that Sharrow was a word, and it wasn't just someone mispronouncing share road. So yeah, we probably should do an explanatory thing on that at some point. But don't worry for you No Way, No How cyclists, because there is something for you here too. The neighborhood bike lane. These are sometimes referred to as neighborhood greenways or bike boulevards. Where essentially planners take quiet, slower residential streets and add traffic calming and wayfinding elements as a way of prioritizing cyclists on these roadways. I know that doesn't sound terribly interesting, but they have a bunch of these set up in Ocean City, New Jersey, which is, for me, the one place on Earth where I enjoy cycling and going for a bike ride, because it's a flat island and it's very easy. But by stringing a bunch of these together, you essentially create this really unique path or corridor through the city that caters to cyclists without much hassle or expense. And again, Ocean City, you know, it sort of takes you through, there's a lot of car traffic there, of course, but it takes you through these neighborhoods a little further away from the beach, and you can just ride through them, and it's very peaceful, and you just see a ton of other bike riders, and it's a really great experience, and I would love to see that here in Raleigh. But, you know, thanks to those directional signs, you can usually get from point A to point B without a GPS or pre-planning a route, which is great.
It is trickier to use a GPS on a bike versus when in a car. I mean, you know, plenty of drivers shouldn't be doing it because they're staring at their phones. But my husband added a phone holder to his bike. I think that's mostly so he can play Pokemon while riding, actually. He did a loop through Moore Square the other day and, like, hit all the Pokestops. If you're brave enough to ride a bike and keep GPS going and somehow keep your eyes on the road, there is an app out there for you called Our Greenway, and it's going to help you stay on the path in places where the greenway splits across a street. Sometimes it ends and you come up to the street and then you have to turn left or right and find it again. If that confuses you, then go check out the Our Greenway app.
Yeah.
James mentioned earlier those oval green signs with numbers that used to be kind of the wayfinding, and I've seen a few of those, but this plan calls for much more of that wayfinding signage, and this is going to be better. It's going to be a lot more clear and obvious to the less experienced riders. They have some pictures of some examples in the plan if you want to take a look. But if you've been out there near the art museum, you might already have seen a good example of this. It's called the Art to Heart section. You may have seen signs that say that. If you follow that route, it's going to take you from the art museum to downtown, which is the heart of the city. So that's the type of thing this plan is going to create more of. Now, as James also said, the idea is to connect things to make it easier. So, again, they're looking at ways to have a cyclist who just wants to take a ride, get from a park to a greenway, and find easy connections to get around, and then suddenly they realize, hey, my grocery store is right here, I can bike over next time. And again, it's just, the whole point is to make it easier for people.
Yeah, and of course, one thing to note about, you know, many of these facilities outlined or described in the plan is that a lot of them won't be built anytime soon or even at all, really. You know, some are put in the plan so Raleigh can essentially, you know, extract right-of-way concessions from future developers or people who wish to subdivide certain portions of the city. And that sounds a little jargony. So what that means is that in the future, if those streets undergo repaving or some other change, let's say, you know, someone buys up a whole city block and redevelops it into probably an apartment complex, because that's what we see a lot of, you know, that's when these bike lane changes will happen, because the city will come in and say, hey, we have this plan, we can stick a bike lane through here, and the developer will probably say, okay, sure, whatever makes it easier. And the cool thing about that is it doesn't really cost much money to make those changes. These generally fall under the long-term planning section of the plan, so if you are looking at the plan and you want to see these changes that might be coming farther down the road, that's where you can find them. In fact, there's a pretty cool map showing the long-term planning vision, and we will link to that in our show notes so you can take a look.
Now, all that to say, you know, the plan does contain a lot of real concrete ideas and changes that we will see, and those are in the 10-year priority plan section. This includes some projects that are already in the pipeline, some have been programmed or funded or in design. And not surprising, these are projects that are the highest priority. So if you're trying to follow along, this is the part where we're at here is in Chapter 4 of the bike plan. Some of these examples include separated bike ways, on Six Forks Roads, Atlantic Avenue, South Wilmington Street. Those are three of the longest ones. Those are each going to be more than 2 miles for those bike ways. There's also a list of places where we're going to get some neighborhood bike ways, some regular bike lanes, and there's going to be some updates to some greenway trails. Greenways, you'll hear us talking about them a little bit. They are part of this plan, but they're, again, also they're a separate thing. So we'll probably devote another episode just about greenways sometime next year. Like I said, there's just so much to talk about on this podcast.
Yeah. There's a lot we can do with the greenways, so that would be a lot of fun. But the bike plan, again, has lots of great maps and a list of what types of bike facilities to expect and where. So if you want to take a look, go ahead. Listing them here is, you know, probably kind of be boring to listen to, so we're not going to do that. So go ahead and just check the website.
Yeah, some of those numbing details that I mentioned, but that right. Paul had talked about are in there. I don't want to just list, hey, Six Forks is going to get 2.2 miles from here to here. And some of those other details include things like the width of the lanes and the thickness of the concrete. Mm-hmm. And that's all in there so that when this stuff happens, the planners and people, they already have it all mapped out. So that's great for them. But for us, it might be a little bit overwhelming. Some things you may not even have thought of are in this plan, like the type of drain gates the city uses. I thought that was just kind of jumped out at me as random.
Yeah.
They'll be installing these bicycle and friendly versions of drain gates as they go. But another cool part about the plan is that it outlines ways to get more people involved in bicycling. As we said, all this connection is happening, but Paul said his mission is also outreach. So one of the three goals I mentioned is to educate people, especially children in schools. The idea is that if children learn at a young age, they're more inclined to keep going or to pick bicycling up again later. They're also going to be more safe and smart on the roads and more comfortable out there.
Yeah. Are you saying kids could actually ride a bike to school?
I know. Say what?
What?
Don't get me started on the carpool lane rant either, because the more cars that are sitting there, the more dangerous it is for someone who actually does want to try to like walk or ride a bike to school.
Right.
Actually, Paul told me a really interesting story of this father who would ride a bike to school with his kid, and then he wanted to park the bikes there. And so he would lock them to a fence because, of course, there was no official bike parking. But people thought that the bikes were abandoned, so they moved them. And that just goes to show how not prevalent the idea of bicycling can be.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why a lot of the program's part in Section 6 of the plan talks about events, bike training, safety town, and other ways to educate both cyclists and drivers about the rules of the road. They definitely need some more education, it seems like, when you're out there driving, but who knows. This also talks about things like a database so people can report bicycle crashes or near misses, bike valet for special events. Now, that is a cool idea, because this also looks at improving bike parking and mentions bicycle repair stations. You may have seen the one by the Marbles Kids Museum. The city has one along the Neuse River Greenway. And yes, bike share is mentioned in there, too, by the way, and I promise we'll be doing an episode on that.
Yeah, I know everyone's probably, well, everyone, all our raging fans are really excited for us to do an episode on bike share. I'm excited to do an episode on that, so we'll definitely get there. Something I think about the bike plan, too, is that it strives to improve and add bike facilities equitably. There are some neighborhoods in Raleigh where people drive less and walk and bike more to get to work or school or the grocery store. Some people don't own cars. So this plan makes sure that those facilities are being added and improved in those areas, especially where it's really needed.
Yeah, and so we've covered a bit about what the bike plan is, so you're probably wondering, okay, when am I going to see something? Here's the cool thing, and we kind of touched on this earlier. Depending on the circumstances, you could start seeing more and more bike facilities implemented as part of regular street improvement projects. So it's not like a lot of government projects where they have to wait for exactly the right timing and the right funding and the right approvals. They can just sort of piggyback onto existing street improvement projects.
Right, but like you said, that's circumstantial as well, depending on where the project is, how much money is available, whether it's feasible to add the bike facilities, and so on.
Right, yeah. And you know, for projects that fall outside this scope, and this scope also includes, like we said, piggybacking onto private development projects, the city has an elaborate, data-driven, 8-step process for bringing elements of the plan to life.
Yeah, and data-driven is kind of a key word. Raleigh gets some attention from other cities for its data-driven approach and open data policy. If you're a geek about data, you should definitely connect with the people who are they organize Data Palooza and City Camp, or a couple events in town. You can also check out the city's open data portal to find various data points that the city collects, and that's all open for people to use if you're into coding or some sort of app or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's really amazing, and I've always loved the city's data-driven approach to so many aspects of how it's run. At my last job, I used to deal with a lot of municipalities across the country, and outside of places like, you know, New York City, Raleigh is really unparalleled, both with how they use technology to aggregate data and then in the way they use that data to drive policy. But anyway, back to that 8-step process, it's really the first 4 steps that are the core of any new bicycle project.
Right. So step 7 is facility maintenance, and step 8 is continue evaluation and consideration for upgrades. Now, those are important to the overall vision of the plan, but not really as interesting or crucial to the development of new projects.
And you forgot step 6, evaluate projects. But, you know, 1 through 4 are in themselves multi-phase steps. You know, first, the city has to select a project based on the prioritization process, which is no small order. And then once that's finished, step 2 involves project development design, which involves some of that data collection analysis that we just talked about. So, for example, if the project is one of those, you know, neighborhood bike lanes, staff will gather and organize traffic counts and speed data. They don't really otherwise develop conceptual designs be on the stage of a rough, you know, alignment before they start talking to the residents. And there's also some intense public engagement, you know, meetings, promotion, feedback, which help shape the final design of the city. And again, using the neighborhood bike lanes, this portion will involve, you know, neighborhood workshops to gather data, determining the best routes, finding out what some of the local traffic concerns are, what the conditions are in those neighborhoods, you know, about destination workshops, which would lead to shared expectations and understanding between what the citywide desires of bicyclists are and what the residents in those neighborhoods and those areas where the facilities will be routed through are. And usually they'll have a few alternatives for the final design as well.
Yeah, this process James is talking about, this is pretty common. A lot of city projects go through a process, and the initial design ends up changing significantly, or maybe not, based on the feedback and input from residents. In our last episode, we mentioned CACs. That's how you get involved. People, if you're interested and you want to be part of this, and you're like, wait, what's going on in my neighborhood? That's a lot of how you'll know about this stuff.
Yeah, and I had said a minute ago about how good city officials are with data collection and analysis. And citizen input is a big part of this. So it's not just people sitting behind computers, you know, playing with all this data. They get out there and they talk to people, and they really do listen to your feedback. But, you know, it's a lot harder to gauge, and it's more difficult to manage this input. So if you ever watch the show Parks and Rec, the scenes where they had public meetings for, you know, the Pawnee public projects are good, if somewhat exaggerated, more humorous version of how this can often play out.
Well, I mean, some of those episodes are dead on. As a former journalist who's had a lot of meetings, I can tell you. But did you know, James, you said citizen, that technically residents of a city are known as denizens, not citizens. Oh. We're citizens of our country and denizens of our town.
Good point, nerd.
Well, I used to be a copy editor. Come on.
Okay, whatever. I think you actually had corrected me on that back at the record.
I probably did.
Yeah, but I still like the word citizens better. So
I know.
Whatever.
Okay.
But once the general design is selected, you know, the planners then have to analyze the potential maintenance needs of the project and go through a detailed design engineering phase. Jen, you had touched on this earlier in regard to the width of the lanes, the thickness of the concrete, etc. So for the neighborhood bike lanes, this entails developing and refining alternatives, analyzing and evaluating the alternatives, assessing the maintenance needs, public engagement with Raleigh's denizens, and, you know, selecting a preferred design. And once that's finished, they move on to step three, which is pre-implementation marketing, which it's pretty self-explanatory. If you can't figure that out, well, tough. After the project has been properly promoted, you know, they can finally begin implementing the project and educating the public on it.
Right. So again, we're part of the process, and James just kind of like cited a bunch of stuff there. Again, this is the steps about, you know, making these bike facilities happen, and educating the public is part of that. And then this podcast is part of it too, we hope.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, it's really amazing how much work and planning goes into something, you know, that seems as simple as just a painted striped bike lane on the road.
Yeah, they really spent more than a year working on this plan. And like we said, it's not short. So rest assured, your city is working on making cycling safer and easier for everyone. And if you don't believe me, just go. We'll link to the plan in our show notes. So take a look.
Take a look at that plan and tell me the city did not spend a tremendous amount of time and effort putting this together. It's really impressive. You know, so that's our sort of a very broad look at that plan. And as we said, there's a lot in there. So check that out at bikeraleigh.org. And as we mentioned, BPAC several times as well. So if you want to get involved, they love participation. Go to their meetings, which are the third Monday of each month at City Hall.
Yeah, BPAC member vice chair Paul Neville had mentioned that to me. He's like, hey, tell people we want to hear from you.
Yeah.
Plus, James and I want to hear from you, too. Do you ride a bike around Raleigh? And if so, what kind of cyclist are you? Are you that fearless person, or maybe you're like, no way, no how? Do you ride with the traffic? Are you just a Greenway rider? We want to know what you think about the Sharrows, the bike lane signage, what you think about the plan, if you've read it or not. So write to us.
Yeah, please email us at inboundraleigh@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook. Our handle on both those platforms is inboundraleigh. We're working on an episode soon about transit and transportation etiquette, and we'd really love to hear your anecdotes about rude or polite behavior that you've encountered while driving, walking, bicycling, riding the bus, whatever. You know, what are your pet peeves? Share with us via email so we can include them on a future episode.
Yeah, that episode we're kind of jokingly calling our transit rant episode. We're going to try not to make it a rant, but it's going to air during the Christmas break, so we figured we'd make it kind of a fun one. I also, real quick, just want to give a shout-out to Little Raleigh Radio. Our show airs first on littleraleighradio.org, and if you appreciate Raleigh's voices, then you should donate $5 a month to that organization, which you can do at that URL I just mentioned. So thanks again for listening to us talk about the bike plan. We'll catch you next time.